This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor. Michael Yon. Michael underline Yon is where to watch his reporting on Twitter. We go now to where in the world is Michael Yon? I've been following for several weeks now, guessing. He's not in Central America. He's not in Europe. He's not in Florida. It was possible, I mean, just a possible that he was in Japan. He also might have been somewhere in Southeast Asia. It did not come to me for some days that Okinawa was possible. And it is, it turns out to be, the right answer. He's in Nago, Okinawa, which is a city in the middle of the very long, boot-like Okinawa. This is a series of islands. So it's the Okinawa chain, not just Okinawa itself. Okinawa is important for American history because that was one of the last challenges the U.S. Army and Marine Corps took on before the war ended. And the fighting on Okinawa was a larger version of the fighting on Iwo Jima, in which the Japanese Army meant to sacrifice itself to protect the homeland, the emperor, and to wear the Americans down so that they negotiated. It didn't happen, but Okinawa was especially fierce, the number of casualties every week, not only among the Japanese and the Americans fighting, but also the Okinawan population. Michael's there, however, for a reason that's very 21st century. We'll begin with his experience in Nago. Michael, a very good day to you. It is morning in America. It is evening in Nago. How is Okinawa doing these days as a agricultural or fishing center? Is it prosperous? Is it struggling? What have you learned? Good evening to you, Michael.
Good evening. Yeah, it seems, you know, talking with locals, it seems like it's slowly, you know, there has been an impact, of course, from the COVID impacted all of Japan, and then other things that people are already probably well aware of. The Japanese economy is slowly being bled out. You can see that. And actually, I'm in Okinawa right now. I'm just actually fasting and studying for a month. Every once in a while, I take a break from the jungles of Darien Gap or those sorts of places, and just read and fast. And that's what I'm doing now. I'm in day 13 of a fast and just reading a bunch of old books. These antique bookstores in Tokyo are absolutely amazing. They're like, you wouldn't believe it. It's heaven. So I went through there and picked up a bunch of old books and I've been studying.
Nago, what does it look like, Michael? Are you in a Motel 6? What is your hotel?
No, I'm in an Airbnb. I've had a really great Airbnb that just looks out over the sea. I can see ships coming and going. You can see now the United States military here is taking a bunch of sand from near where I'm at now, and they're moving it to the other side of the island to build a runway on the military base over there, which you got the communists out here, you know, protesting and that sort of thing. Interestingly, the communists who protest are, you know, if they're even communists or there's, you know, bought and paid for, that they don't have their dialects, their accents are not from Okinawa. They're from Honshu and other places. They're just the normal paid, quote unquote, activist. We've seen this everywhere. You know, you see that in Hong Kong, and I've seen it especially in Thailand and the two coups. I was in Thailand. You'll see a lot of the protesters, so-called protesters, are literally paid. And they'll tell you sometimes, too. They're like, yeah, I got to go get on my bus now. Interesting.
Building a runway. What's that about, Michael?
Just expanding the military base there. And so that, you know, obviously the you know how the information wars go, you know, because you talk about that all the time on your shows. I mean, this is a, you know, they're, you know, the protesters are out here trying to get the United States kicked out of Okinawa. You know, I'm very close right now to where Ernie Pyle was killed. The famous war correspondent was killed. There's a memorial for him on the tiny island of Iwo Jima. And I was just over there a couple of days ago with Japanese journalist Masako Ganaha. We went over there, and it's very close to here right now. And you know, this is when, you know, the Marines and the rest of our military hit the beaches here in Okinawa. because it was a major battle. The Okinawa was so important. There were about 100,000 people killed in this battle. I think about 12,500 Americans, if my memory is correct, and the balance were Japanese. It was a tremendous battle here, and Uri Pyle was shot and killed, and so this is, you know, and so anyway, being back here now is something else, you know. Especially, there's not many combat correspondents out there. You know, there's a lot of it's Camp Schwab, by the way, where they're building that runway. But there's not many actual combat correspondents. You'll be lucky to ever actually meet one. There's a lot of war correspondents, but there's not many combat correspondents.
Let me check the island where Uri Pyle was killed. Is it Iwashima, the one off of the coast?
Yep, it's just down the road from me. You get on a ferry. You can get, and the ferries are nice. If you're over here, get on the ferry. It's like super nice, and it's about a 30-minute ferry ride.
I want to give somebody an understanding if they have a map. You see the large island of Okinawa, long, thin. Michael's in the middle in Nago. Iwashima, you continue down that peninsula from Nago, heading towards the mainland of Asia, and then there's several small islands. There look to be a lot of shallows, and there's the body of water in between Okinawa and Iwashima, which is on my map spelled I-E/S-H-I-M-A, Iwashima. And that's where Uri Pyle, the war correspondent, died. After living through the Italian campaign and the Normandy campaign, he was. My memory is that he was killed by a sniper. Is that accurate, Michael?
That's what I've read. Funny though, at the memorial, it said he was killed by a Japanese weapon or something like the firearm, by a Japanese firearm. It didn't say sniper, and it's quite interesting. And there's a memorial there that says at this spot. I'm looking at a photo of it we shot 2 days ago. At this spot, the 77th Infantry Division lost a buddy, Uri Pyle. 19 April 1945. That's when he was shot, and you know, he was something else. He was a combat correspondent. There are combat correspondents, like, honestly, stay a lot of combat in a lot of combat. Many war correspondents go out and they want to get a video or something or some photos of a firefight they were in so they can use that forever. But people like Uri Pyle are extremely rare. And one of the only other ones I know was Joe Galloway, a friend of mine, rest in peace, Joe, and me. You know, there are others, but they're so rare that you rarely have two in the same room. You can have 10 war correspondents in the same room, but people who spend month after month and year after year in combat, like Uri did, like Joe did, like I did, they're so rare, you just don't. I never meet other ones, actually. It's so uncommon. I haven't seen one in years.
Let's talk about combat, Michael. The reason the Okinawa chain is critical is because when the Chinese attack, it's not Taiwan only they have to concern themselves with. They have to seal off and control the passages out of East Asia through the first island chain. And they have to deal with the Philippines, and they have to deal with Japan, and they certainly have to deal with Australia, and the U.S. will be coming from Guam and from Hawaii. So the Okinawa chain, especially Ishigaki off of that passageway, is the way we can presume the Chinese will come out on with their submarines and with their surface vessels. So your measure now, are the Okinawans aware of this? Do they respond to it? Do the Japanese leadership in Tokyo, are they aware that Okinawa will be the choke point to control the PLA Navy?
You know, some are. Some of the military people are, and others are like American politicians. You know, and I say that, you know, I get to meet quite a lot of them. I mean, you know, for instance, Masako Ganaha and I have spoke at the Diet, and that's which is like their parliament. And, you know, we talk with members of the government constantly. So, I mean, a lot of them just have no idea. They've got their heads buried in the sand. Not all, but they've been the subject of intense information war. it's not that the Japanese aren't smart. They're incredibly smart. I mean, they're amazingly smart, but they've also been, sequestered almost by their own language. Insofar as, for instance, let's say with the COVID issues, you know, most Japanese don't speak any foreign languages, so they don't have the ability to go online and look at things in English or in German or anything, right? And so, they're easier to hit with information more. They just don't have many other avenues. But the bottom line is, you know, I was in Ishigaki with Masako and Chuck Holton, what, a couple of years ago or so. Ishigaki is the Okinawa Islands close to Taiwan, relatively close. And we talked with the mayor there. And, you know, he's concerned if there's a war in Taiwan that, you know, the Ishigaki will just get overrun because, you know, the Taiwanese will just come in. And then his people will have to leave. Japanese will have to leave Ishigaki. We actually, a new missile base was being put in. We went up to the front gate and asked to talk with the commander, but we didn't have time to wait a few days for permission. But we'll probably just go back and see if we can set up a meeting in advance to talk with the commander. But you know, that this is the front line of freedom. I was also in Taiwan recently with Masako Ganaha again. We met with very interesting people, and we went to Kinmen Island. Kinmen Island, for those who don't know, is Taiwan, but it's an island. You can swim to China from that island. I mean, literally, and I don't mean like a 3-day swim either. I mean, like, you know, a couple hours, you would be over in China, because people do swim back and forth, and they come up on the beaches of Kinmen, which is Taiwan. They swim from China. They'll take like a, you know, just anything that floats and swim over, and then they get picked up on the beach by the police or whatever in Taiwan in Kinmen. Let me say one thing about Taiwan again. I mentioned this before. You know, I talk with a lot of interesting people like Doug McGregor and all those I communicate with constantly, and very few of them realize that Taiwan was never part of China, ever, not for one single day. But it's common knowledge that it is, but it's untrue common knowledge. And it's just this, it's a product of information war. People that are listening to this and say, yes, of course it was part of China. Well, you're wrong. I mean, you got wrong information. It's intentional. You know, China has done this. They say the same about Tibet. You know, I've been up to Tibet. In fact, I just had lunch with the Dalai Lama's nephew again. He just messaged me like an hour or two ago. We met up with him over in Taiwan and then again over in Tokyo, you know, talking about Tibet and these sorts of things. It's common knowledge, for instance, that Tibet was part of China, which it was not. It's common knowledge that Taiwan was part of China, which it was not. You know, China is constantly out claiming territorial ground everywhere. You know, years ago, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago, I published it that, you know, China would claim the moon. They would say that some Chinese astronomer, you know, mapped the moon first or something. And then they did. I mean, because they're so predictable. And right now you see they've drawn maps in the United States about which Indian tribes used to be, you know, are actually Chinese. I've been talking about this for a long time. Michael, they do the same down in Ontario.
They claim to be a near Arctic state that are going to make claims on the Arctic Ocean and the Antarctic Ocean. They claim this.
That's right. That's why I was up in Yellowknife recently in Northwest Territories, 250 miles from the Arctic Circle. Again, with Masako Ganaha, the Japanese journalist, we were up there, and we were looking at just this. I mean, the Chinese are making. They're trying to make the natives everywhere think that they're descendants of Chinese, right?
Well, the land bridge of Beringia, 15,000 years ago, that was Chinese, right, Michael? Not Siberians. That was
So we were down in Honduras looking at the same thing, and they're trying to make the Honduran, natives think that they're Chinese. And you know, they're very effective at it because they'll be like, yeah, we're buddies, you know, we're cousins, and you know. We're always looking at these dragons, by the way, the Chinese dragons. we always count the claws on the dragons. If you see a Chinese dragon, like you see up in Vancouver, Canada, you know, in Chinatown, we were up in that recently. There's dragons all over Chinatown in Vancouver, Canada, and they all have five claws. When they have five claws, it means China is claiming that as imperial land, right? If it has four claws, you're a relative. And if it has three claws, you're, you know, just like a friend. And so we're always, every time we see a Chinese dragon, we're counting the claws.
Michael, a detail. I learned recently that the Polynesians are all across Oceania, the thinking is the original dare to leave land and voyage at those distances was out of Taiwan. Isn't that fascinating?
It is.
Yeah,
it is.
And they island hopped and navigated without astrolabes or chronometers and followed the currents and peopled all of the islands that you've flown through and visited. Taiwan, not mainland China. Taiwan.
That's right. They were expert at reading the waves. I read a book on reading waves, and they talked about this, how these experts, they could just read the, they could, you know, the people that with that old knowledge who really understand the sea, they can see islands through the waves and these sorts of things from, like, you know, 1,000 miles away or so. I mean, it's really odd. They don't even need the stars. They can just read the waves and the currents and find their way all over the place.
Let's go to Central America. Michael Yan is in Nago, which is a city in the middle of Okinawa. This is the Okinawa chain. We will return to Okinawa over the years because this is where the battle's going to be. Everything that Michael's talking about in Okinawa, the Ishigaki or Ishijima that he visited, that will all be the target zone for the Chinese attack, all of that. And the Chinese need to land on Okinawa and hold it if they're going to hold those passages open. And we know how difficult it was for the Americans to land on Okinawa. It will be equally difficult for the Chinese when they come. But we're going to Central America now. It's not about China. It's about the policy of Panama and the policy of the United States these last years is something famous called the Darien Gap. This is the Friends of History Debating Society with Michael Yan. I'm John Batchelor.